Okay, let's see if we're all on the same page, literally. So we're up to Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. And let's just see how many lines up we are from the bottom. Yeah. Omar Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak. So if we're counting up from the bottom, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines up from the bottom. Now, what do we have to know in order to appreciate this statement of Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak? What we have to know is that the Mishnah at the beginning of the Masechta made a takana that a woman who's never been married before should be married on Yom Revi, going into Yom Chamishi, you know, it's Erev Chamishi. And the reason for that is that Beis Din convenes on Yom Chamishi, and we want to make sure that this husband, if need be, will get himself over to Beis Din without any delay. Because if he gets married earlier in the week, then days are going to pass by until he gets to Beis Din. And in the meantime, she'll make lovey-dovey to him, and she'll pacify him, and he'll cool off, and he won't end up in Beis Din. Oh. Now, obviously the premise of this takana is that Beis Din convenes on Yom Chamishi. If what would be, theoretically, if there was a Beis Din available on every single day of the week? Well, I shouldn't say every single day, because there's no Beis Din on Shabbos. There's an Isur Ladun v'Shabbos. But let's say 6 out of 7 days. Then would it make sense to insist that he marry her on any particular day of the week? Oh, okay. You're a step ahead of me. I'm very impressed. Okay. But before we get to that, I mean, just talking in terms of what we know from the Mishnah, and the Mishnah is focused on Tainus Pesulin to make sure he gets to Beis Din, then I understand that if the premise is that Beis Din only convenes on that day, then she should get married to him the night before that day. But if Beis Din convenes on every other day, then what difference it make when he marries her? And that's exactly what Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak is addressing. Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, lo shanu, when do we learn that a woman for the first time has to be married? On Wednesday night, that's Allah mitakonas Ezra v'elech. The Gemara establishes in the Masechta of Bava Kamma that Ezra HaSofer made a takana that Beis Din should be set in its place, kavua, on 2 days of the week. Then it makes sense that she should get married on Wednesday. Again, you might ask the question, why can't she get married on Sunday? And that's where Evan introduces the Svar of Shaktu, but let's leave that for just one moment so we don't get confused. Aval kodem takonas Ezra. Now, before Ezra came along, Beis Din would convene any day of the week. Now, you may ask me the question, that's going to cost the municipality a lot of money, you know, to pay the dayanim to sit there 6 days of the week. But the answer is, I don't think it means that Beis Din is there, sitting there, you know, waiting, you know, twiddling their thumbs 6 days of the week. But it means, if need be, if there's a case that comes to, you know, to the attention of the Beis Din, then on any day of the week they'll sit and convene a Beis Din, but there's nothing particular about Yom Chamishi before Takanas Ezra V'Elech. Shahayu Batei Dinim Kvuim B'chol Yom. Rashi says B'Shava. Rashi says that every day was the same. Therefore, there's nothing unique about Mondays and Thursdays. Is Isha Niseis B'chol Yom. So, Rabosai, if I were Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak standing in front of you and giving you this entire lesson on what went on before Takanas Ezra, what would you say to me? Who cares? Like, what's the difference? Was it a lesson in history? Why do I have to be concerned with what went on before Takanas Ezra? And in the language of the Talmud, that's called Maida Hava Hava. What was, was. It's history. Put it in the books. But I don't have to spend my time and the time of the yeshiva students who are listening to Rav Shmuel's shiur that they have to hear this whole presentation. Koda Takonis Ezra Maida Hava Hava. You're telling me something that has no nafkamina. It doesn't have any bearing.
again, if you want to tell me something conceptual and break new ground on a theoretical level that might help me understand the Torah, that's fine. But if you're just telling me history, might have a...
Well, maybe because if it was, if ostensibly even after Takanat Ezra,
It could be relevant.
Could Beit Din also sit on a Tuesday if there was a case that came up?
So the thing is like this, that Takanat Ezra, as you point out, Max, may not have an eternal existence to it. And there could be times, even after Takanat Ezra, where the Takana reaches its fruition, so to speak, and terminates. And that's what the Gemara says in the next line. He says, Hachi kamar, i'ika bate didim dekvum ha'idna. If today, in our time, even after Takanas Ezra, the Takana would be Batel, and the Bezdin would be Kavua B'chol Yom, then Isha Nises B'chol Yom, a woman can get married on any day of the week. So that even though Rav Shmuel spoke about the historical period of time that preceded Takanas Ezra, but it has bearing, L'Halacha, even today, if the Takanas Ezra is no longer in force, and the Beis Din is available on every day of the week. Now, let me just ask you the following question. What would we have thought if not for Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak? Why? Why are we locked in? Does anybody know what principle should apply over here? This is the question of the Chasam Sofer that I'm presenting to you. It's not my own original question. There's a big chiddush in Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, and if not for this chiddush, I never would have accepted Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak. I would have insisted that even if today we no longer... Exactly. You need a Bezdin Gadol Mimenu B'chachma V'minyan. Means the following. When Bezdin makes the Takana, and Ezra's Bezdin was a very significant Bezdin, then that Bezdin has authority, and no one could undermine that authority unless they are a greater Beis Din, b'chachma v'minyan, both qualitatively and quantitatively. So the Chasam Sofer asks, I don't understand Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak. See, you and I ask the question, so what's the big chiddush? There's no reason to limit the marriage to one particular day if Beis Din sits on every day. I mean, like a dumbbell would figure that out on his own. I didn't even Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak. The Chasam Sofer is asking the exact opposite question. Punk fakert. I don't understand the conclusion of Rav Shmuel. How do we have the audacity to undermine the Takana, which is codified in the first Mishnah Ksuv, that was established by Ezra, that Beis Din sits on these days and only these days, and therefore a woman who's getting married for the first time can only get married on certain days, and we're going to throw that all out because we decided it's no longer relevant. So the Chasam Sofer gives a beautiful answer. He says the following. We don't read the Mishnah properly. The Mishnah never says that a woman has to get married on Yom Ravi, period. What the Mishnah is saying is that a woman has to get married on the day before Beis Din. So if the Takon of Ezra is in force, then she has to get married on Wednesday. If there's no Takon of Beis Din, and all days are equivalent, so I can always gather together a Beis Din whenever there's a need, I don't have to wake up the Dayanim and then call them out, then that itself makes the day, whatever day of the week it is, as the day before Beis Din. The Nela, we're not undermining the Takana at all. The Takana always was the day before Beis Din. If it was during the period of Ezra, then it's the Wednesday before the Thursday. If it's today, then it's any day of the week. It's always the day before Beis Din. Okay. Now, look at the language of the Gemara. It says, "I'ika bate dinim dekvuin ha'idna kekodem takanas Ezra." Tosfos on the bottom of your page. Nirlari, demikol makom ein niseis b'shishi. One day of the week has to be crossed off our calendar, and we'll give the caterers a day off. There's no weddings on Yom Chamishi. By the way, I don't mean, just one second. what I meant to say is Yom Shishi. Now, I don't know, Rabosai, is anyone here in this room ever been at a wedding on a Friday?
Yes. Morning?
Well, usually it's around noontime. I wouldn't recommend it during the winter months, but there actually was a minhag here in Yerushalayim to do this kind of thing. And it was all because of finances, because they had to prepare expensive meat for Friday night in any event. So we might as well use that meat for the Sudas Chasa. Don't ask me about Ein Marv and Simcha V'Simcha. Or Ein Osu V'Simcha V'Simcha.
Also Europe. It wasn't just Yerushalayim, it was also in Europe they did that.
It was a minhag in Europe too?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was there.
Okay. I don't know, is that minhag in Europe still extant?
I don't know if there are too many Jews left in here.
Right. Yeah, Hitler did a job, but I'm just saying, I don't know if the minhagim still apply. But I know that in Yerushalayim there is such a minhag. I attended two weddings. I don't know if anybody knows Dr. Mati Stern. So he married off his children on a Friday. And Binyamin Adler was married on a Friday, am I right? The Masada Kiddush did a great job, by the way. I'm just kidding.
It wasn't the Friday afternoon leading into the Shabbos meal.
Right. They served a meal, but nevertheless, the logic of Tosfos should still apply. Meaning, you need a wedding on the day before Beis Din. And that's true for any day of the week with the exception of Friday. There is no Beis Din on Shabbos nowhere, ever. No, nowhere. So what we're going to have to come to grips with is how is it that we allow weddings on Friday? Okay. Just one second. Give me a minute to clear my head. So Rabbi Kivega wants to say that this Tosfos about weddings on Friday really depends upon a sugi that we're going to get to later on Daf Hey, which is called Be'ila Rishona B'Shabbos. Are you familiar with that sugya? Okay, so that's a complicated sugya, which I think we'll enjoy because we're going to try to make it clear. And basically, it depends upon what's called the Davar Sheina Miskaven. And if we assume that Ein Bol and Bila Rishona B'Shabbos, says Rabbi Kiveger, in such a case, even if the wedding takes place on Friday, the Bila Rishona is going to have to be postponed until after Shabbos. Which means that we gain the takana of getting him into Beis Din as soon as possible before he cools off. Now, how we paskin on halach lamaisa on Bila Rishona B'Shabbos, I don't know. We'll have to check in the poskim. But I think the very fact that we allow weddings on Fridays, and indeed it's a minhag, like you say, even in Europe, I didn't know about that, but it's all has to do with the finances. That itself would seem to give me the impression, and I have to double check in halach and Hilchos Yontif, that Ein Bol and Bila Rishona B'Shabbos. At least that's how Rabbi Kivega would see. But take a look at Tosfos. Yeah? Take a look at Tosfos. He says the following: V'ata nagim lisa af b'shishi. And our minhag is to get married even on a Friday. Why? Mishum di'ein beis din kvuim. We don't have any set beis din on any day. In other words, we fit into the ha'idna of the Gemara of Shmuel Bar Yitzchak that all days are equal, which means that if Yesh lo Titus Besulin, Yachol Likbol B'Shabbos Bifnei Shlosha. What happens in our time? Go find the Dayan. Are they sitting there every single day of the week? As I said before, that's going to cost big bucks. The answer is they get together on call, on need. He says if a man marries a besul on any day of the week, what does he do? He comes in to a room which is empty because he won't find the dayan in the next morning, but he'll be able to convene a beis din. Again, exactly how they do it, if you use a foghorn or a red flag, I don't know, but somehow he can convene the beis din. Says Tosfos that there's another halacha, and this applies to a het to Shabbos as well as any other day of the week. He can present his protest in front of three people. They will not convene an official beis din. They'll take up the case on Yom Rishon after Shabbos because we can't have an official din on Shabbos, but we've already clinched, we've already gained exactly what we have to gain, and that is that he won't cool off. So Yochel Likbol b'Shabbos b'fnei Shlosha k'mo b'shar Yemos HaShavua, and that's exactly what goes on. The Ode, and furthermore, Lepirish b'Kutris, the Dafka b'Yemeim Kovu Yom HaNisui Mishum Shal Yidei Kach Yizbara Dovri V'Vo Eidim B'Toshim Es Asfim Hom L'Bezdin Ein Shayach Lomar Achshav Kach. Rashi says, let me just jolt your memory, back in the Mishnah, that the takana of Besula Nisayis Yom Revi was made for Shar Noshim, for most women. In those cases, there's a sfek sfek. Again, we're not going to go through the whole thing. It's a sofik tachtum, sofik eimtum, sofik rotzum, sofik yonim. And the whole deal and the whole purpose of getting him into Bezdin is to send out the call, you know, the voice or the message. If anyone has testimony to clarify any of these sfekas, please come forward. Therefore, says Tosfos, if the whole point is to get the coal out because of this Sfek Sfeika situation, he says, what are you afraid of? You're afraid that maybe this woman had a relationship with a man during what period of time, Rav Osai? During, what's that called, the period of time? The 12-month period of time? Anybody? Come on, help me out here. Erusin, correct? During the Erusin period. So he marries her on the 1st of January of 2015, right? And he brings her into the chuppah on January 1st of 2016, a full year later. What did she do during that year? Well, he finds a Pesach Pasuah. He suspects her of some sort of hanky-panky business during that 12-month period of time. Therefore, we got to get him into Bezdin immediately. Says Tosfos, but in our day, where there is no period of 12 months between Erusin and Nisuin, therefore, we don't have to be so concerned about sending out the call. Because, in truth, we don't really need Bezdin to function here to clarify the Sofek. Even if she did have some relationship, it took place before the Erusin, because the Erusin and the Chuppah take place simultaneously. That's our minhag. So there's not that much to worry about. He comes along Rabbi Kiveger and he says, wait a minute. This is not going to help us in the case of a Kohen getting married to a woman for the first time. Why? Because if the Kohen gets married to a woman, that's not a double Safek. That's only one Safek, correct? And therefore, if it's one Safek, then Safek derais l'chumra. So what are you telling me? You're telling me, Tosfos, that I don't have to care about Shabbos because on Shabbos he can get together three people and send out a call, right? But that's not going to help me for the case of an Ashes Kohen, because in the case of Ashes Kohen, we don't need the call, we need Bezdin. We need Bezdin to tell him that he's not allowed to have any sort of relationship with this wife because she is a Chad Sfeika situation. That's Rabbi Kiveger's cash.
He'll still go to that group of people and tell them, and that's the issue. And there's, we don't want him to cool off, but he'll still go to that group. And then the Bezdin will meet the following day.
So Tosfos, according to Rabbi Kiveger, is saying that group will send out the call, which is meaningful in the case of Sharon Hashim, but it's not going to help to paskin for him that he's not allowed to go back to his wife. Because again, these three people are just ordinary people, rank and file citizens, that are very good to send out a gossip and a rumor, but they're not good to paskin shilas. And they're not going to be able to tell him that he's not allowed to resume relationships with his wife. Okay. Let's go on, Rabbi Osman. What are you telling me? That he can marry her today? On any day of the week, here's Evan's kasha. Vabeinon shakdu. The Rabbanan made another takan. When you ask the question, why does a man have to marry a woman on a certain day of the week? There are two answers to that question. One answer is because we got to get him into Bezdin. The other answer is we have to allow for 3 days of preparation for the marriage, for the marriage celebration, for the suda. And if he gets married on Sunday or Monday or Tuesday, he won't have the full 3 days that are necessary to be matriach himself to prepare the suda. So therefore, even in our day, even though there's no issue of Titus Pesulim, because he'll always find a Beis Din, let's say if he gets married on Saturday night, he'll have a Beis Din on Sunday, etc., etc. But nevertheless, if you allow him to get married too early in the week, i.e. Saturday night, Sunday night, or Monday night, then he won't have a full 3 days to be Mekayim the Takon of Shoktu. Shoktu means that the Chachamim were very careful about the Takon of Bnos Yisrael to guarantee that every Bas Yisrael will have a beautiful Simcha, and that therefore the husband will prepare the Suda for 3 days, not less than 3 days. So although you've circumvented the issue of Tainis Pesulin, and therefore she can get married on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, because every day following there's a Beis Din that's convened, but nevertheless, you haven't solved the problem of Shoktu. So the Gemara answers, Ditriach Lei. Let me explain the Gemara. The Gemara says that with regard to Tainis Pesulin, you have to guarantee that the marriage take place the night before Beis Din convenes. At the time of Takanas Ezra, that would mean Wednesday night. In our time, it could be any night. And that's a strict rule that knows no exception. However, with regard to Shoktu, there are exceptional cases. I'll give a modern example. Let's say the wedding is going to take place on Sunday. And sometimes we have weddings in America, I know this is common, I assume it's true all over the world, on Sunday afternoon. I've been at weddings that start as early as 11 o'clock with the shmorg, right? Again, there's a whole chakir, which is the kasuda? Is it the shmorg or the suda? In America, for sure, it's the shmorg, there's no question. I mean, you could eat more at the shmorg than you'll ever get to eat at the suda, I mean. And today, Baruch Hashem, you know, you could have a shmorg. Here in Israel, I think it's a little questionable. I don't even know if the suda would fit. But anyway, certainly not the shmorg, you know. The shmorg, you're lucky if you get something with a toothpick, you know. Yeah. But be that as it may, you get married on a Sunday. Where's the food coming from? And what's the answer? What do we have in modern society that they didn't have back in the time of the Gemara?
Refrigerators
and freezing, so we can take food out of the fridge. It's not exactly fresh, you know. It's not like challahs that came out of the oven, you know, 2 hours before Shabbos, but it's pretty good. It's so good that you could probably fool anybody but an absolute istanis or a gourmet. So the Gemara says that even back in the time of the Mishnah, there was a possibility of preparing the food adequately before Shabbos, and putting it into some sort of, refrigeration or whatever it was. And you could be Mekayim, the Takon of Shoktu, before Shabbos. So whereas the Takon of Besulin, this is the ORV, to get him into Beis Din, that is absolute and knows no exception. It's got to be the day before Beis Din. With regard to Shoktu, there are exceptional cases. And in my humble opinion, what the Gemara might be indicating is that in halacha we distinguish between monetary obligations and what we call iser v'heter. When we deal with iser v'heter, there's no room for leniency and we don't make exceptions. The rules are hard, you know, engraved in stone. But when it comes to monetary obligations, for example, he getting married to this woman has a monetary obligation to her that expresses itself in spending whatever amount of money is necessary, again, according to the society in which he lives, hakol fi amakom hazman, on preparing the suda. Here we can be more flexible. And if he finds a way of fulfilling the takon of shoktu and spending 3 days preparing the suda, even before the week's end, for the wedding that's going to take place in the beginning of the next week, then it's not engraved in stone. And that's why the Mishnah doesn't tell us anything about the Takon of Shoktu. Takon of Shoktu does not engender a limited date for the Chasana. It engenders a Chiv Momon. Take care of the Tircha. Guarantee that she will be provided with the Suda that she deserves. And if you can figure out how to do that and have the wedding on a Sunday or a Monday, that's exactly what's going to happen. Now here on both sides, I want to ask you the following question. What is the nature of this Takon of Shoktu? For example, what would you say in the following case? a man wants to get married to a woman, and he doesn't want to go through the whole hassle, or he doesn't have the money for it, to put together the suda that she deserves, which requires 3 days of preparation. So she says to him, you know what? I love you, and I need chashev b'cha, and I'm mochel, and I waive my rights. Would that completely neutralize the takana, the requirement of shakt? So what would be your knee-jerk response?
Yes,
why not? This whole takana was made on behalf of the woman. Shaktu chachomim al takanas bnos Yisrael. If she decides to be mocheles, that's fine. There's no separate gzeres akosiv here that he has under all conditions and all situations. He has to be torah 3 days to prepare the suda. He's doing it as a favor to her. Chazal codified this in halacha that she has rights to demand that. But if she waives those rights, that's called ha'omer yefshi v'takonis chachomim shomin lo. When a person says, I don't need it, we listen to him.
The Gemara had a halamina that you had to have those 3 days. I
mean, that what?
You had to have the 3 days. Why the Gemara had a halamina that?
So the question is, when the Gemara asked, but what about the 3 days? Was the Gemara asking in a case where she insists that he, you know, fork up the 3 days worth of tircha, etc., etc.? Or was the Gemara assuming that there's an absolute rule that knows no exception of gimel yamim of tircha? And even if you assume the latter possibility, but what happens in the maskana when the Gemara says the tarich lay that he somehow pulled it off? Maybe the Gemara is now reducing the level or changing the nature of this shaktu. So I have here a very interesting footnote. Begeder takonas shaktu nechleku rishonim. There's a machlokas rishonim how to understand this din of shaktu. Yesh sovrim sheikara litzorech hasuda nitkina. Right? Kidei shehu yeh mesameach oso. Some say that this takana was made fundamentally to guarantee that he provides her with a suda so that he makes her happy. L'samcha. U'lefi zemahani mechila. Al takana l'tovasa shel shaktu. If the obligation... Oh, so I'll tell you what I think he's saying. The law is that when a man marries a woman, and it's the first marriage, he's not allowed to go to work for 7 days. You know that? Let's say she says to him, go to work. It'll be helpful to our financial situation as we begin our marriage. And I'm mochel on my rights that you stay home to be mesameach. So many poskim, and that's how it's poskim pretty much, say that that works. There's no absolute rule that he can't go to work. If she's mochel, then yefshi b'takonas chachamim. A similar concept would apply here in Shaktu if it's made and geared for Simchas Hakala, that if she says, I don't need it, that's fine. Maybe if he doesn't get involved for 3 days of preparing the suda, they can save some money and use that money for the wedding. And she's not interested in impressing her, you know, keep up with the Joneses, you know, I had a bit fancy today. It's crazy. I mean, what people spend on weddings... I mean, I was at a wedding in New York. The flowers, I mean this seriously, cost more than all the chassidus I made for my 5 kids. And I'm not exaggerating. I mean, if I would start to describe, I mean, it was in the fanciest hotel in Manhattan. I mean, I'm just talking about the flowers. I can go on and on. I mean, there were 2 bands. I mean, one of them was Freed. What's his name? I'm from Freed. I forgot who the other one was. But, I mean, it was dripping. I can't explain it. It was, and I sat next to a rabbi who has a yeshiva of his own in the New York area, and he was crying to me because he said that, you know, when he tries to raise some funds for his yeshiva from the guy who made this wedding, he gets almost nothing. He gets ice in the winter, as we say. So he has plenty of money, you know, it was probably $500,000 that he spent on the wedding. So there is a tendency. But if you have a woman who's tzanua, and she says, you know what, I don't have to impress anybody, I don't have to keep up with the Joneses, you know, so she's mochelitz. Then he says, "Avol yesh mifarshim." Others say that ikar atakana is kidei shelo lahotzi lazal leho she'ena besula ki ein adam toreach besudo mafsida. Others say that there's an isa veheter element in shakta, that Chazal wanted to spend this money so that he won't be tempted to just dissolve the marriage by claiming the next morning that I found a Pesach Pasuach and some hanky-panky going on. You know, what's going to stop him, really, from going into Beis Din and claiming that he found it to be a Ba'ula?
Why would he want to do that?
He doesn't. He wants out of this marriage. You know, there's, again, I don't have to tell you, there's some marriages that last just an hour or so, you know.
It doesn't sound like a takanas based on.
So I'm just saying the following. There are many takanas which Chazal made, and I'm thinking of one in particular. I hope you'll guess what I have in mind, where the Chacham want to make it very difficult for him to divorce his wife.
With 3 days of February, how's that?
Just one second. But what takana do I have in mind, Aaron? What is the most outstanding, profound takana that the Chazal made to make it, you know, hey buddy, before you throw a get at this woman, you know, think about it twice.
Ketubah,
exactly. Ketubah. The reason why they established a ketubah, which means if he divorces, so he's got to pay 200 zuz, which may not sound like, you know, I don't know how much a goat costs today. In those days, it cost 3 zuzis, so you could buy, for 200 zuz, you could buy 100 goats. You know, and if you were Bedouin here, you know, you could probably marry a heck of a lot of women with that, those amounts of goats. So we're talking about a significant sum. I mean, according to Pre Yoshua, the Masayim Zuz is the equivalent in any particular society of what it costs to support a family for 1 year. So it's a significant sum. And Chazal say, why did the Chazal make such a takana? The Gemara says, Kedei shelo yei kala beinav lehotzia. And he realizes that if he throws a get at her, he's going to have to pay the price for that. It's not a cheap deal. So they made it, and especially in the case of a Kohen, because if he throws her a get, forget it, he can never remarry her. That's a tragic, you know, irreversible situation. So, you know, buddy, calm down. You know, find a way of ironing out the differences. And in the case of Suuda, here I don't even need a get. If I want out of this marriage, it's like in a jiff. All I have to do is run into Beis Din and say, Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, do me something. And it's so easy to lie.
But having a big meal beforehand is going to...
Oh, the suit itself is expensive. He went through this entire tircha. And maybe he'll think twice before he runs into Beis Din.
Sounds far-fetched.
Okay, but I'm just telling you that that's one sheet. But today, and enough convenience where the mechila would work. Yeah.
Today, a lot of times, the parents of the bride pay for this.
Oh, so that's going to be a sugya later on.
Okay.
That we're going to get to who actually pays the money for the wedding. But be that as it may, the tircha is a responsibility incumbent upon the husband. Max, could I trouble you? Could you just get me a little water, if you don't mind? I'm just kind of totally thirsty. Thanks. All right. So let's get back to the Gemara. My shakt, what is shakt? This is the top of Daf Gimel Amud Beis. You have it? This Tanya we learned in a Braisa. Mipnei ma omru besula nises liyoma harvi. Shim hayelo tainis besula yamashkin lebezdin. And then the Braisa goes on and says, v'tinase b'yechad b'shabes. V'im hayelo tainis bezdin yamashkin lebezdin. Since Bezdin sits on Monday as well, so let him get married on Sunday. And if he has a time to school, he'll run into business. Thank you so much. On Monday. Zemar says, Shaktu chachom al takonis benos Yisrael, she'odim tarech besuda, shloshi yomim, echad b'shabes, sheni b'shabes, u'shlishi b'shabes, u'revin kones. So again, if I ask you the following quiz question on your next exam, so when would it be possible for him to marry her on Sunday? What would be the answer? Again, there's no problem with Bezdin because Bezdin's going to sit on Monday. But there's a problem with Shoktu. The answer is, if he prepared it before Shabbos. Good? So that would be a good answer to a quiz question. Okay? Oh.
Now here, I want to share with you an insight on the Maram Shif. You may have the Maram Shif in the back of your Gemaras. It's published on the same page as the Marsha, I think, if I'm not... No, actually, there's a separate section of the Maram Shif. I don't have it in this Gemara, because this is a small edition of Ksubas. But if somebody could find the Maram Shif, this would be helpful, because the print here is tiny. I really should have brought myself a Zchuchit Magdelet here. You know. Now, the Maram Shif notices something here in the Gemara, which is something that certainly didn't call it didn't catch my attention, you know, but it caught his. And he says the following.
Gimel
Amud Aleph. Okay, it's a Dibur HaMaskil that says Ubazem Mekushar. You have such a thing?
Yeah.
Ubazem Mekushar. So you know what? Maybe if you don't mind, I'll borrow yours just for a minute to get to see it a little bit easier. Where does it start?
Yeah.
Ubazem Kushar Hetev Kusha Shelva Habinon Shaktu Bemaid Mefarish Yika Bezna Idem Ashenkein Ikoi Lekodim Takonis Ezra. Okay. So let's explain the Maram Shif. If you're opened up to Daf Gimel Amud Aleph in the Gemara, you'll notice that the Gemara presents the following sequence. We'll call it A, B, and C. A, the Gemara presents the statement of Rav Shmuel that mitakonas Ezra v'Eilech, then we need for her to get married, she's required to get married on Wednesday. Fine, but before Takonis Ezra, she can get married on any day. That's A. Then we have B. The Gemara says, Kodim Takonis Ezra Maidahavahavah. Why is Rav Shmuel telling me something that's no longer relevant? And then the Gemara C says, well, it might be relevant today if we convene at Beis Din on any day of the week. Then the Gemara asks, for habi'inon shakdu. Don't we need shakdu? Meaning, how could you allow for a wedding to take place on any day of the week if it's Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, there's no shakdu? So the Ram Shif is bothered by the following question. He doesn't understand the sequence of the Gemara, the logical flow. The Gemara, when it heard Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak in the first round, who said that before Takonis Ezra you could get married on any day, the Gemara right away should have jumped up yelling and screaming, but what about the Takon of Shaktu? Because even notwithstanding the issue of Maidava Hava and so forth, is a theoretical that, but the very premise of Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak is that it's possible that a woman can get married on any day of the week if you solve the problem of Beis Din. But that's not true. You have another problem to solve, and that's exactly what the Gemara is going to yell and scream at Shaktu. So the Maram Shif wants to know, why did the Gemara delay its question of Vahashaktu, being unshaktu, until after the Gemara goes through this whole rigmarole and tells us that Ha'idna, etc., etc.? So he says the following. It's very interesting. He says that the Takana of Shaktu came much later. In other words, before the Takana of Ezra, there was no Takana of Shaktu. So if Rav Shmuel was talking about, he was addressing exclusively the time period before Ezra, then there was no way that we could have asked, what do you mean they wouldn't get married any day? What about Shaktu? There was no Takon of Shaktu. He says, Rakli Acher Shebira Gemara, Sherav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak Medaber Li Acher Takonis Ezra. Now we're talking about a post-Takonis Ezra period. Therefore, the Gemara asks the question, Me'ata, Ein Lisa Kodim Yom Dalet Shim Kvar Batla Takonis Tanis Vesulin, but Kvar Nitkino Takonis Shaktu Velo Batla. The Gemara is asking the following question, that with the Takon of Ezra, we also have the Takon of Shaktu. Ezra made these two Takonos. And even if you'll resolve the issue of Takonis Ezra as far as Beis Din is concerned, because that Takona today is no longer in force, but you still have not repealed, you haven't torn down the Takon of Shaktu. So in the post-Ezra period, although I have to have the marriage before Beis Din, and that could be solved on any day of the week, Ha'idna, because we no longer are bound to Beis Din on Sunday, on Monday and Thursday, but nevertheless, we haven't repealed the other takon of Ezra, namely of Shakdu. And even if any day of the week is a fine candidate because of Beis Din, but what about Shakdu? That's the Chiddush of the Ramshif. The reason I share it with you, even though it's very technical, is because I was fascinated by his methodology. Meaning, I don't know if we're sensitive when we read the Gemara, and we should train ourselves in this methodology to see the flow of the Gemara step by step, and when the Gemara raises a question or not. I know in Birkas HaTorah they do this, am I right? Also in Chappelle's, I don't know if anybody here, nobody here went to Chappelle's. In those yeshivas, they're very into methodology, but when I talk about methodology, I don't mean Brisker Loftus, maybe that too, but what they're more interested in, because I have a friend, Yitzi Shapiro, who learned in the Old City. You know Yitzi? No? So Yitzi was in that yeshiva for many, many years, and even after he was working, he used to learn there whenever he had time. And he was very impressed when we sat down and learned. I was always very impressed by the way he analyzed the Gemara. The Ram Shif, therefore, is very good. Okay, Rabosai. Now we have to wake up. Is everybody awake? Because we're about to embark on one of the most profound sugyas in Masechta Ksuvos. And I feel like Rabbi Akiva, who asked the question to his audience, why did Esther rule over 127 Medinas? And his answer was because Sari made her live for 127 years. Okay. The Gemara says the following. You started the Braisa, let's continue and learn the second half of the Braisa. Umisakana vi'elech, nagu ha'am lichnos b'shlishi v'lomichu b'yodom chacham. Rabosai, the Braisa tells us that as a historical fact, it became very dangerous for a woman to have her first marriage on Wednesday night. Wednesday night was a bad idea. It was so bad that it became a life-threatening situation. Now, therefore what? So I would have said that if it became, for whatever reason, we'll get into it in a minute, but and this is a real Hanukkah Gemara, because all this that we're going to learn about takes place during the period of the Yavanim, but if I grant you that it's a sakana to get married on a Wednesday, so what would be your next conclusion?
Get married on another day.
Can you get married on another day, or do you have to get married on another day? What would you say? What do you say? You have to get married on another day. And it was basically Chachamim at this point in time should have repealed the takana of Yom Revi, because Yom Revi is sakana. Chas v'shalom to allow. Yeah, somebody will say, "Ich bin afruver." You know, I'm going to be very, very meticulous about this, and they made a takana, so I'm going to fulfill the takana, chas v'shalom. So it's very strange that the Braisa says, Nagu am lichnos b'shlishi, it became a minhag, and whenever you have a minhag, you know, there are always people who are going to violate the minhag. V'lomichu b'yadam chachamim, as if to say the chachamim were a little bit skeptical about this minhag, but you know what? Let's look the other way. But why are we going to look the other way? Because it's sakana. Very strange price. Then it says, "Ubesheni lo yichnos," meaning you have the option. You cannot get married on Wednesday because it's sakana, but you have the option of getting married on Tuesday. So get married on Tuesday. Why? Because let's at least give Shakdu the maximum within the situation, the scenario that we have, that we can. So if she gets married on a Tuesday, then at least he'll have Sunday and Monday, maybe even half of Tuesday to prepare the wedding. If she gets married on a Monday night, then what's he going to have, a day and a half to prepare the wedding? That's not much time. Then the Braisa says, V'im machmas ones, so ones, mutter. Even on Monday, you're allowed to get married if it reaches the level of onus. So, Rabosu, we have three questions here that we have to answer on this price. So, first of all, what is sakana? Secondly, what is onus? And the differences between the two. And thirdly, why does the Bryce establish that Nagu Ha'am, they had a minig of getting married on Tuesday, velo michu chachamim? If it's a real sakana,
they should have completely rescinded their takana of Basula Nisayis Yom Ravi. Then the Braisa concludes, and this part of the Braisa we'll get to much later on, so we'll just read it at this point. Umafrishin asachosim and akala lele shabosos tchila mipneishu osachabur. That if he doesn't get around to consummating the marriage on Wednesday night, then not on Thursday night, he waited till Friday night, that's a problem. Why? Because he's making a chabura, this is her first marriage, and therefore we have to be mafrish them, we have to separate the chos of a kal to guarantee that he won't consummate, he won't have a relationship with her on Leil Shabbos. Again, that's going to be one of the major sugyas and ksuvas, but it's not for us now. Fact the Gemara, my sakana. Ilema di amri besula niseis liomar vite horeg. Now here the key question is, what does di amri mean? Di amri is what's called a gzeras malchus. And there's a fancy word in Latin for it, but I forget what it is, if anyone remembers. Okay. But they used to have a gzera that the officer would have first rights to a basula. And that was the decree, and by pain of death, if they found out that that a woman, you know, got married to a man, and they didn't allow her to be brought to the hegemon. The hegemon is the leader. What do you call it? The governor. Okay, the governor of that area. Then that was a sakon. Oh. So they found out, the goyim, that in the Jewish religion, a woman would get married if she was a basula on Wednesday night. So therefore, they made a gzera, a decree, and they say you can't do such a thing. You can't consummate the marriage on Wednesday night. First, she has to be brought to the hegma. And this was part of the Greek gzera of Shmad to try to undermine the Jewish religion and try to bring tumah where there was tara. In fact, the Gemara, if that's what's going on in this Braisa, Nagu, you're saying that it was a spontaneous minog how do you say lakdim in English?
There's no one word translation.
There's no one word for lakdim, no. Only in Lashon Kodesh. To make it earlier or whatever. Maybe there is a fancy word in English. I don't know.
I have to look
for one. Right? To advance, maybe. I don't know. To advance the wedding. Is legamri niakre. What the Chachamim should have done was they should have been oker this minhag from its roots, and they should have made sure that no one would even dream of getting married on Wednesday, and that there is any sort of vestige of this gzera. So then it can't be that sakana means tiboil a hegmon tchila. So Rava says, Omar Rabba, excuse me, the Amri, they made a different gzera of Besula Hanises Biyomar Avi Tiboil Lehegmon Tchil. I have to just retract one little thing I said. The Gemara doesn't know yet that I already assumed Tiboil Lehegmon Tchil. The Gemara thinks that since it was a religious edict and a requirement that a basula get married on Wednesday, so in order to attack and undermine the Jewish religion, which is called Shmad, the Gemara thinks they made a gzera that if she gets married on a Wednesday and violate and fulfills her religious requirement, that is a violation of our decree, and she'll be killed. She'll be put to death. Well, they'll be put to death, both of them. So Gemara says, then they have to be oker, completely undermine and rescind this takana of Besula Nisli Yom Ravi, and null and void it will be. And therefore, if there's no religious edict or requirement in the Jewish law to get married on a particular day, that's how we're going to guarantee the safety of the Jewish nation against this decree. But Rava says that the reason why they didn't rescind this gzera is because the gzera was a different gzera. Not that if they get married on Wednesday they'll be put to death, but rather besula nisis biomer viti boil lehegmon tchila, that she would first have relations to this man, to this hegmon, to the governor as we called it.
Now, as a result of this sakana, again, it's called a sakana because she'll have relations with him, but nevertheless, the chacham would not go as far as to be oker the takana, because it's not a life-threatening situation, meaning in the worst event, what would happen is, again, this is pretty bad, but it's not a life-threatening situation. She would have bia to the Hegmon Tchila. And in such a case, the Chachamim didn't feel compelled to be oker the takana, but rather they allowed the marriage to take place on Yom Shlishi. That's so far what the Gemara has. So again, the Gemara says it's not a sakonis nefashos because the decree was if you get married on Wednesday, that's at the pain of death. But rather, it's a little bit lower. It's only tibayel lehegmon tchila. I say only with a knacker only, but it's not tibayel. Oh, so that's going to be the subject of this tosis. You see this long tosis on the right side of your Vidras? Your Vidras. So let's wait another minute till we get to Tosus, because Tosus really raised this question on the next paragraph. The Gemara says, "Hai sakana ones hu." Why, Rava, does this Brisa use the word sakana? We're not talking about a sakana. There's no sakana. Nobody's going to die over here. Ella, what? It's an ones. Ones means a rape situation. That's what he should have said. Mishas ones v'elech. Then they could get married on Yom Shlishi. So the Gemara answers, Mishum de'ika tznuos, there are very religious women, de'masra nafshayu l'ktala. When the Hegmon comes, they are going to absolutely refuse to submit themselves to this relationship, even if it means they'll die. And here, Rabosai, the Gemara operates with the following premise, which I don't understand, but I'm just going to present it to you. Maybe by next week, I'll somehow figure it out. The Gemara thinks that why will the Tznuos go that far to give up their lives? Because they make the following calculation. If I have this relationship with the Hegmon, I cannot consummate my marriage with my husband. He will have to divorce me. That's the opinion of the Tznuos.
So they don't know the halacha, isn't there?
They don't know the halacha. The Gemara is then going to ask, well, why don't we teach them halacha? But before we get to that, the premise of the Gemara at this particular juncture is that the Tznuos are convinced that if they would submit themselves to this bia relationship with the Hegmon, they can no longer be married to their husbands. And that means that their lives are ruined. Their reputation is ruined. They feel that they're carrying with them a pagam, a stain on their very reputation, their very purity, and life is worthless. They would rather die, you know.
Isn't there another halacha of a veira defarhasya that you do the halacha because you have to give your life
in shachmat?
Right. So the Gemara comes to the conclusion, but again, we're fast forwarding to the main kishkasugya that isha karka olam, and therefore she doesn't have to give up her life.
What if he's a
Kohen? So that's what we're going to get to in a second. So the Gemara is going to say, well, look, if you're worried about the woman drawing this conclusion that she has to die because otherwise she'll be Asur al Baila, then why don't we straighten out the record and teach them? And the Gemara is going to say that's going to work for an Eishes Yisrael, but it's not going to work for an Eishes Kohen, because an Eishes Kohen indeed is not going to be able to resume her relationship if such a rape takes place. And therefore, these women are going to give up their lives. But let's see again. All your questions are excellent. I'm just trying to sort this out so that we can go through the Gemara. So the Gemara says the Asyon Lidei Sakana. These Tznuos are going to be in a life endangering situation because they're going to fight off the Hegmon and refuse to submit at all costs, even if it means that they die. So that's why we call it sakon. Now you might ask, well, again, if that's the case, if you're worried about the tznuos, then why not repeal the gzera? And the answer is because it's not common that it's not that every single time every woman who's in this situation is going to refuse the hegmon and therefore die. And not only that, we may be able to mitigate this problem by educating the tznuos. But there is nevertheless the possibility of a sakon.
And therefore, you know what? Let's not get involved in such a situation. The minhag had it that we want to avoid even a possible sakana at all costs. Let's get married on Tuesday. If we get married on Tuesday, the hegemon's not around. She's not going to be dreaming of giving up her life, if necessary, you know, at the pain of death. And that's called mishas sakana v'yeda. Says the Gemara, I don't get it. What are you talking about? The tznuos are going to give up their lives? That's ridiculous. Well, lidrash lahu, the onus shari. Why not just get together all your Beis Yaakov girls and teach them a lesson in Hilchos Kiddush Hashem? And the Torah says, v'chai b'hem v'loshi yomus b'hem, except for the big three. And this is not one of the big three, which Tosfos doesn't say why, right? And therefore, she has to submit herself according to the halacha to this terrible thing of bia. Why? Because there's no yeharik v'yav. Onus is shari. In a rape situation, that's what she has to do. So what's the problem over here? You're worried about a sakana v'tznuos? Just teach her. Teach her the halacha. And the Gemara answers the ikar prutzos. You know what? There are women who might enjoy this situation and take advantage of it. Again, chas v'shalom, we shouldn't know of such a thing, but the Gemara is not embarrassed to say that there are prutzos. You're going to let out the word that you're allowed to have relations with the hegemon. There may be X number of women who would enjoy that relationship. And therefore, from the pleasure they derive from this relationship, they are in a situation where they're no longer allowed to have relations with their husbands. Of course, they're going to claim, I did a bonus, and I'm scot-free, and I can resume my relationship with my husband. Again, he's not a Kohen. And they're lying through their teeth. They really did have ruts on over here. But of course, they couldn't scream because they were afraid the hegemon would kill them. And technically, according to Allah, they're not allowed to resume their relationship with their husband because it was a bit of a ruts on. And therefore, we're playing a very dangerous game here. If we get up in front of the whole school and we announce to the girls, to the seminary, that you should have relations with this man. Because you never know. Some girls might distort it and take advantage of it. And it's amazing how the Gemara understands all this psychology, all this sociology. And the Gemara is not embarrassed to speak it out. So the Gemara says, we're worried about another group of women. Ikanami Kohanos. There are those who are getting married to Kohanim. I mean, she's getting married to a Kohanim. And in that case, they're going to assume up front that they have to give up their lives rather than allow themselves and submit themselves to this bia because they can no longer resume their relationship with their husband. And therefore, we're going to try to tell them, you know, Lidrashu Don Ashari, that even if you have this relationship, you're allowed to resume your even if you have this bio, you're allowed to resume your marriage with your husband. And therefore, they'll understand very well that these are circumstances beyond their control. Harai, they're allowed to resume their relationship with their husband. And they won't give up their lives. We'll avoid the sakana. That was the Gemara's cash, but the Gemara says we can't really do that. Because if we publicize the fact and educate the women that they can resume the relationship with their husbands, that's not always going to be the case. Aaron?
I was going to ask, how do you know that this is read as the wife of an Eshet Kohen to be, and not like a Bat Kohen who, if she's like found of Znus, she can have like the death penalty, no?
I was reading according to Rashi. Maybe you're right. Let me just see if there's any other interpretation here. I didn't see one. I don't know. Right? Rashi is learning Nesaros al Baleim. We're talking about a woman who's married to a Kohen, and he says at the end, the Ashes Kohen Nesra is Asura Labaila. So I was influenced by Rashi. Bali Neder, Aaron, if you press me on it, I'll try to research and see if anyone offers a different interpretation. Oh. Now, the Gemara is going to ask the following question, Vili Akre. You know, if Taka, you know, we're in a no-win situation here, and as a result of the hegemon, if a woman gets married on Wednesday, we really have a sakona. There are X number of women out there that are going to give up their lives, and we can't allow that. Is Li Akre, we should really repeal the Gzera and completely get rid of it? The Gemara answers, Gzera avidu debatla takanta derabonon mekavi Gzera lo akrina.
the gzera of the kingship of the malchus is going to eventually be terminated. You know, God will see to it that we're protected, and it will no longer hound us. But at Takonat Rabbanan, we don't want to be oker that, because the Takonas Chachamim has to withstand that decree of the Malchus. Now, the decree of the Malchus is transitory, it's unfortunate, we have to live through it, but we're not going to repeal and rescind the Takonas Chachamim just because of the Takana, of the Gzeir, excuse me, of the Hay. Oh, now, Max, we get to your question. For Lidrash Ludionis Shari, the Imtomar Vamrinan Viperek Ben Sorum Morir, I'll call Averus Yavro Vial Yehori, Chutzmi Avonis Kachom Gilia Reis, because Domin. This is a married woman having relations with another man. She should definitely have to give up her life under the law of Yehoreg v'al Yavar.
She's not married yet.
She is married.
Oh, so the law is that after Erison, right, that's our discussion, she's an Ashes Ish. And she gets Misa just like a woman after Nisuin gets Misa if she has another relation. Again, which particular capital punishment we use shifts from Skila to Chenik, but that's not relevant for us. It's definitely a capital crime, even after Erusin, and therefore it should engender a halacha, says Tosus, of Yeharik Valiyah. So here, for the balance of this Tosus, just by way of introduction, we have a machlokus between Rabbeinu Tam and the Rivam. Both well, from the family of Rashi, the two of the greatest Baliatosis. And I would like to start with the Rivam, because I find the Rivam a little bit easier. And the Rivam says that in the case of a woman, we don't apply the principle of Yehari Valiyah. And this he bases on a sugya in Sanhedrin called Karka Ol. And the sugya of Esther. The Gemara in Masechta Sanhedrin asks the question, how did Esther submit herself to a relationship with Achashverosh according to that Mandiomar that she was married to Mordechai? Right? Vayikach oso labas, according to one Mandiomar, Tikri bas al labayis. So if they were married, then it was Gili Arayis, and she should have been willing to give up her life rather than submit herself to have a relationship with Achashverosh. And in a certain sense, you know, the whole, you know, half of the Megillah goes down the tubes because Mordechai himself was part of the, you know, encouraged her to present herself as a candidate for marriage to Achashverosh. And moreover, you know, what we find is, you know, Mordechai says, what's the language? Al Tegalias Esamech. What's the language of the Megillah? Who remembers? When Mordechai commands her not to reveal her nationality. Well, how's the language going? Okay, I forget the exact language, but you remember what I'm talking about in the Megillah. But Mordechai is involved at every step of the game. Mordechai is a member of the Sanhedrin. And he is encouraging her to get married to Achashverosh. What was he thinking? She wouldn't have relations with Achashverosh? And nowhere does it say that Mordechai gave her a get. So the Gemara in Megillah, I'm sorry, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Isha Karkaol, that if you're going to violate Avodah Zarah Gilui Arayis Shefichas Domim Bikuv Vaaseh with a Maisa, then you have to give up your life. That's called Yehoreg V'Aliyah. But if you are submitting yourself without an action, you are purely passive, then the halacha is your aver is not so severe, and yavar v'al yehari. And Tosfos says, therefore, if you murder someone passively, now that sounds pretty odd, doesn't it? That's like an oxymoron, or oxymoron, whatever it is. How can you murder someone passively? So Tosfos comes up with a case where the goyim say to you, allow yourself to be thrown onto the baby. We'll throw you onto the baby. You'll crush the baby to death. And you will be over, shvichas domim, bekarka olam. You're purely passive. And Tosfos says that in such a case, you don't have to give up your life. You're allowed to submit yourself to be thrust onto the baby, even though you will violate Gila Shvichas Domin,
you're a rotzeach v'shevi al taseh. The Baal HaVar goes a step further, and he says that even in avodah zarah, we can have a case of karka olam, where they will take your body and bend it in a hishtachavoya, in a bowing position in front of the avodah zarah. You don't have to give up your life for that. And this is the famous principle of karka olam, which literally means the ground on the earth, which is totally passive. So if a woman submits herself to have this relationship, like Esther in the case of Achashverosh, insofar as she's not active, she's totally passive, there's no din of Yehar Gal Yavar. And so too in the case of Tibayel Lehegman Tchila V'lidrosh Lehuda Onishari, says the Rivam, we can publicly teach the girls that they can submit themselves, they have to submit themselves to this relationship with the Hegmon, rather than fight him off and get killed as a result, because Isha Karka Olam and there's no Chiyuv of Yehar Gval Yav. That's the Shita of the Rivan. Now, for some reason, Rabbeinu Tam is not happy with that approach. Perhaps he thinks, as Rav Aaron said before, this is public in nature, and maybe something that's public, it's well known that the Hegmon takes her in, that takes on a different level, meaning that Karka Olam is a mitigating circumstance in terms of the Avera per se. But now we're in a whole different league. Now we're talking about Kiddush Hashem and Chil Hashem. With Kiddush Hashem and Chil Hashem, it's all a question of what your decision was. If you made a decision in which you said, you declared, not in so many words, that it's more important for me to live than to violate the Torah, right? My life is greater than the violation of the Torah, that's a Chil Hashem. And even if it was done passively, you nevertheless submitted yourself. You didn't fight off the attacker, and therefore it's Chil Hashem. I don't know. And that's something that I want to take up with you next week. But Rabbeinu Tam has to come up with a different answer. So why is V'lidrash Lehu Dion Ashari? You're telling me that there's an Iser of Gili Arayis over here. And with Gili Arayis, the principle is Yehareg V'al Yavar. You have to give up your life. So what's V'lidrash Lehu Dion Ashari? And here Rabbeinu Tam comes up with the strangest revolution that I ever heard. Everything Rabbeinu Tam says is always a revolution. He was very revolutionary, Rabbeinu Tam. Yehareg Val Yavar only applies if the Boel is Jewish. If the Boel is not Jewish, there's no din of Yehareg Val Yavar. The Gemara asked the question on Esther with Achashverosh. That's because the Gemara understood that that was Befarhesia. But as far as the Avera Bitzin is concerned, then with regard to a guy, there's no din of Yehar Gval Yav. So Bli Neder, this is what we want to study next week. So thank you very much, and we'll continue next week.
Did Rabbeinu Tam hold his time, or that he must?
Rabbeinu Tam would
say. I'm saying maybe because you argue that that is active. No, there's no way to say that the Boris Gemara is that. Nothing to talk about.
We'll talk about it.